you're paying, I want to say you're paying for the ceiling. He could out earn it, but there's so many hitters who could hit 20 to 25 home runs and, steal 10 bases with a decent enough average that it's like, why would you pay for this level when you can get this from a lot of other players at the position? Welcome to episode 184 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, Mike Gianella, and behind the glass, as always, is Jen Mock Ramos of the BP Stats team. In addition, with me, my co-host and fantasy editor at Baseball Prospectus, Zach Steinhorn. Zach, how are you doing this Monday evening?
I'm doing all right. You know, still waiting for Harper and Machado to sign. You know, and at this rate, I think it might be July and they might still be free agents.
You know, I do actually wonder if there is I thought this would be impossible, but I wonder if there's a tiny, tiny possibility that one of them, I don't think both would, but if one of them actually just holds out and kind of does what like Roger, remember Roger Clemens, like when he got older and, he signed like in the middle of the season and he kind of wound up getting almost as much money as he would have gotten had he played a full season. Like I wouldn't be surprised if one of them did that. Although I think as some people have pointed out, it makes it weird because I think that you could still attach a qualifying offer to one of them if it's a one-year deal, and there's all sorts of weird complexities. We're definitely in some unknown territory, and Machado is a good segue because we're talking about shortstops this week, and as our readers know, some of them don't love this. He's listed at shortstop as everyone is who played at the position. So I think we're just going to dive right in because it is a rich position to our fantasy tier article at shortstop. As readers know at the site, we've been going through position by position. We've been matching that up at the podcast. And, before we kick it off, Zach, I mean, do you agree with me that is shortstop not only the richest position in fantasy this year, but probably one of the richest you've seen in years?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember the old days when you drafted, say, Hanley Ramirez first overall because there was a huge drop-off after him. But this year there's, whether you want speed, whether you want power, whether you want batting average, it's all available among that shortstop pool. So a very nice position to even use your early round picks on.
Yeah, and let's look at some of those early round picks. So we have six players in the five-star tier at shortstop. And, like I said, that's pretty impressive. That's except for outfield, which you have to draft many more of them in most leagues. There's just one shortstop or three middle infielders in total. So those shortstops are Francisco Lindor, Trey Turner, Trevor Story, Alex Bregman, the aforementioned Manny Machado, and Javier Baez. So I don't know if we're going to talk. We probably should at least touch upon all these players because like I said, they're all going in the top 20 currently in ADP. Zach, since I started off the show, I'll flip to you. Who do you want to talk about first here?
Let's start with Lindor because he's really the consensus top overall shortstop this year. Drafted mostly within the top four picks, usually after the big three of Trout, Betts, and Ramirez. You see Lindor. I don't think I've seen him fall beyond four in any draft. But Lindor. If you were doubting whether the 2017 power surge was for real, he went from I believe it was 17 homers in 2016 to 33 in 2017, and then he hits 38 last season. So he set career best numbers in four of the five standard roto hitting categories. Batting average was the only exception, and now over the past two seasons, he sacrificed some batting average for power. But he's still at 277, so the batting average is still solid. So, my question to you would be, are you sold on Lindor now as a legitimate, 30-plus home run lock for years to come? And also, what about the steals? He stole 25 bases after stealing just 15 the year before. So where do you stand in both in terms of homers and steals for Lindor going forward?
Well, the power is legitimate. It's a combination of him kind of filling out, growing into being comfortable with his swing and his body, but also, you know, he's a strong guy. And, you know, I think I always thought he had the potential to hit 25. Last year was certainly a surprise, and I could see Lindor slipping. Like, I don't see him getting better than this. I think Rob Silver in his piece today suggested Lindor could get a little bit better. I feel like this is the ceiling outside of maybe batting average. As far as the steals goes, that's tougher just because although Lindor's fast, you know, it's not like speed is his game primarily. And it's not difficult to envision him only stealing 15 or not running as much. You know, Alex Bregman, who we'll talk about a little bit later, is a player like that. We know Bregman could steal 20 to 25. He didn't do that last year. So if there's a point with Lindor where you might have pause drafting him, I don't think you should, it's that the steals could drop a little bit. But yeah, this is like a top six player at worst. So if you have a preference over, you know, someone else at four, you know, for Lindor, I think that's okay. At the other side of it, if you want to push Lindor past his teammate, Jose Ramirez, I think that's okay. But this is a pretty safe pick in the first round.
Yeah, I think maybe it might be just a little bit safer to expect maybe what he did the year before. Maybe he hits 30 homers with 15 steals. And you know, the difference between, say, I don't think 38 homers is a realistic expectation once again, but you know, the difference between, say, 25 steals and 15 steals is a pretty legitimate, you know, difference in fantasy. Lindor, he's still going to be a first rounder, but he might not be a top five guy if he only steals 15 bases. So yeah. I think that's probably what we're going to be looking at. But still, you know, you're not going to really get you'll be happy with Lindor even if you spend a top five pick on him this year.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the other piece too is his batting average could go up. You know, I don't necessarily think it will. But, you know, he doesn't – I don't see it going down to, like, 250 or 260. And, you know, 270 or so seems like the floor there. You know, so if Lindor has a 30-15 season, it could also come with a 290 or you know, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, regardless, he's going to be a elite contributor in all five categories. So let's now – I think we'll move on now to Trey Turner, who he's an interesting guy to talk about because his NFBC ADP right now is 9. Which seems a little bit low for him, just considering that he could really carry you in the stolen base department. The issue with him is, you know, can he match the 19 homers he hit last season? I think he could because he did hit 11 homers in about half a season the year before. So if you get that type of power along with the game changing speed, you're in very good shape. So where do you how do you rate Turner in terms of for this season? Are you very comfortable taking him, say, in the top five, or do you think he's more of a back end of the first round type player?
No, I'm pretty comfortable with him at five or six. I'm a believer. The steals, as you point out, are legitimate. You know, the funny thing about Turner is I think he'd run more if the Nationals let him. They seem to hold back on him a little bit because of the wear and tear. They're a smart organization. They know even though he's an asset there, they don't necessarily want to push him to steal 65, 70 bases. You know, I'd say 60 is probably the high end for him realistically. But, you know, what you said is true about the power. I feel like 11 is 10 to 12, somewhere in that range is the floor. And that's what you're looking at. You're really at 10 to 12 home runs from Turner with 40, 45 steals. Steals are at such a premium. You know, you're kind of looking at like Whit Merrifield as a floor for Trey Turner. And, you know, we know how valuable Merrifield was last year. So, yeah, I'm all in on Turner. I'm fine taking him at this slot. And, you know, probably your worst case is he earns as a second rounder. And I just don't even see that happening.
Yeah, the question with Turner is, you know, whether you're comfortable waiting, say, till the, you know, a little bit later in the draft, say third, fourth round to address steals, or whether you want to do it immediately. I'm personally, I do have the fifth pick in the mixed labor draft coming up, and, you know, Turner's someone who I'd be considering, but, you know, I'm personally leaning towards more of a, you know, get your stud power guy in the first round, get, you know, Arenado or JD Martinez, and then kind of cobble together steals later. But there's certainly an argument to be made about, you know, locking up the steals with Turner, yeah, and then piecing together the power, doing it the other way around. So that's a dilemma you'll have to, you have to pick in that spot in the first round.
So, I mean, I will say something interesting about that. So heading into last year, one of the reasons that Turner and some steel players were so enticing was because there was so much power in 2017. You know, many people say the ball was juiced or altered. And in 2018, it didn't drop a lot, but it dropped enough. And we've seen this in these articles where, a couple of years ago, the two-star tier even had like 20 home run hitters. You know, this year we get to the three-star tier, and those players drop off. There's still some 20 home run hitters, but the league isn't peppered with those players. So I think to your point, Zach, last year, if you had said, oh, you know, I'm not taking Turner there, I would have said, what? Like, why would you not do that? This year, an Arenado or J.D. Martinez, who I'm sure the players you're looking at, locking in that kind of power at the five isn't necessarily the worst play.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm leaning towards. And then, you know, you do have some risks with taking steals, say, you know, staying a guy like maybe like a Tim Anderson, guys who could steal 20 bases, but they also come with very poor batting averages. So there's a little bit of a risk there where you take that trade off. But to me, I'm just a little bit more comfortable, like you said, you know, knowing that I'm in very good shape, you know, with at least the four categories right off the bat, I'm in that first round.
So, okay. So, yeah, let's jump to it since there's six players here and we could go on for a long time at this rate. Let's jump to Manny Machado. We mentioned him at the front of the show. So the big question about Machado that I've been getting asked, I had a chat today earlier at BPF, had a busy baseball day. Does where he signed, I think is an easy one, but does his value get impacted by where he signs? Assuming he's ready on opening day, you know, let's just assume that for now. Or is it a moot point? Is he an elite player regardless of where he lands?
Yeah, I was going to ask you the same question. So I think my answer would probably be that he's an elite player regardless of where he lands. So I don't really think it makes much of a difference. I think you know, he was in Camden Yards originally, and that was a great place for hitters. But I think, well, let's see, he could either go to Chicago, Philadelphia. They're all pretty favorable hitters' parks, or maybe he goes to the Yankees. But I think, you know, regardless of where he lands, he's going to be in a great spot.
San Diego's the wild card. That's been mentioned as an outside shot, and except for that one year, it's played as a pitcher's park, so that could be a little rough. I you know, my feeling about this, he's elite. I just don't feel so. He's going to hit like 32 home runs instead of 37 if he changes parks. It doesn't feel like a big thing to me.
Yeah, he's a rock solid pick. I'd say he's where is he being taken? Maybe towards the late first round, maybe around that 10, 11.
I think it's a little bit. I'd have to look. I don't have it open. I think it's a little later than that. But yeah, it's toward the back end of the first round. I feel like there's almost a little bit of a bargain in play here because of the uncertainty with, you know, his free agency. Like we'll get into this, like when we talk about outfielders, I see that with Harper too. Like Harper's going, you know, toward the beginning of the second round. I mean, I know it's a different conversation because Harper had a down year in batting average. Machado's 14th overall. And, you know, it's funny, and you know, we can kind of segue into this guy. Like, as much as I like him, and I think I like him more than you do because you're risk averse, like, I feel Machado at 14 is a better buy than Javi Baez at 13.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would definitely take Machado there. I guess we could transition into Baez.
Sure.
So Baez, you know, his season, really, I would say Baez is probably on a lot of winning championship fantasy teams just because of the profit he delivered to his owners. And, you know, the issue with him is that he still has a very high, you know, strikeout to walk ratio. So the plate discipline skills really haven't gotten much better. Yet he had that unbelievable season. So what you're, how confident are you in Baez? And at least, I don't know if he's in a, you know, at least duplicating what he did last year, but at least even coming close to what he did last year.
I think I'm close. I'm higher on Baez than most. And, you know, I in Baez's case, I believe in the talent. And the other piece of it is that more so than that, he is what he is, and if you've watched Baez carefully, he's adjusted his game. First of all, he's an excellent, terrific bad ball hitter, like maybe the best I've seen since Vlad Sr., or, you know, if you want to go back a little bit further, or not far that far back, Alfonso Soriano. He just makes the most of what he has. He's always going to strike out at this rate. Like, he struck out 26% of the time last year, 28% the year before. He just maximizes his at-bats. And you can kind of see his BABIPs. His BABIPs are 336, 345, 347. He just doesn't get cheated when he does, you know, make contact. So do I think he's going to hit 290? No, I feel like 270 is more of a level. And, you know, it's kind of similar with everything. I can see the power dropping a little. I can see the speed dropping a little. So to me, it's not that I don't like Baez. I just feel like he's a little overpriced where he's going. Like, he feels more like a mid-second rounder to me. And, you know, people taking him are the kind of people who love Javi Baez. They believe that not only is this his level, but I suspect they're looking at his age. He's 26 this year and thinking there's going to be a little bit more. And I feel like last year was a career year.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I'm not overly down on him, but it's one of those situations we talk about with a lot of players, like someone else in your league isn't valuing him a little bit higher than you're going to value him. So that's the situation with Baez for this year.
Yeah, the final piece I'll say about Baez is that just about everyone else in this tier, so Lindor and Turner didn't hit for a significant average, but they did enough everywhere else, and Turner's a stolen base monster where it's like you can take the 270. The problem I would buy is if he drops to 270, and he's a 30 home run hitter and he's a 15 steal player, he's out of this tier. He's close to being out of this tier. So that's the difference. He has the most risk here. That's kind of what it comes down to, too, which is six shortstops, all top 20. He's the one I want least here. It's not an indictment on Javi Baez. It's just that it's such a rich position that if I'm going to go, I'm going to go with Machado or Trevor Story, both who are going later. And actually, let's segue into Story. I know I'm kind of rushing through this, but again, there's six players. And Zach, if you want to cut me off and back up, by all means, we can do so. So Trevor Story, first season, he had that game where, he hits the four home runs. He has that amazing, not the four runs. He has that amazing week. He can't seem to stop homering. And then the rest of the season, in 2017, was a slog. And I think a lot of people looked at him like that was him. And he's kind of comparable to Baez in that he's always going to have a lot of whiff in his game, but he dropped his strikeout rate from 34% to 26%. He started stealing bases. It was something he did in the minors. And, people, I have to say, I'll admit, I didn't trust the speed to translate. And Brett Sayre, I don't think Brett predicted 27 steals. It was like, he'll run. He's got real speed. It's legit. And Trevor Story had an amazing year. So my question for you, Zach, same thing as Baez. Are you buying or are you cynical that, he's going to repeat the story? I'm sorry.
I think it's a similar situation to Baez. Story's ADP is now 19, which is between Paul Goldschmidt and Aaron Judge. So, to me that seems a little bit high. So it's very similar to Baez in that, I'm not overly into him, but I think he could have a strong season, but I think the price is just a little bit too high for my liking. So I don't really see myself owning Baez. I don't really see myself owning Story this year.
Yeah, this is the one player on this tier where I believe, unless we get to Bregman, that we diverge. Like, I'm all about Story. He was my value pick in the five-star tier. I, in fact, like him better than anyone but Lindor and Turner. And, the two reasons are, one, I believe he keeps a lot of those steals, unlike Baez. I can see another 20 to 25. And the other piece of it is Coors. The Coors factor is real. He had 26 home runs at home. He had 11 on the road. And, I know what people say in real life about these types of players. It's not legitimate. They're not nearly as good. Like, outside of Larry Walker, and I think maybe Nolan Arenado, I'd have to look at his splits, they're not real. But it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what Trevor Story is like as a real hitter. All that matters to us are the counting stats. And is he going to get 26 home runs at Coors? No, but 20, low 20s is pretty easy to see in that park with that swing. And that's kind of what I'm buying into. Like, I'm buying into a player I think is going to, go 30-20, keep a lot of that batting average because of Coors, and I'm in it at this price.
All right, so now let's move on to Alex Bregman. He's the final member of this five-star tier that we haven't talked about. Bregman, he turns 25 next month, so it is a little bit scary in one sense to think that there might be another level or two that he can still reach. But, at the same time, I think you mentioned this in your tier article as well, with an NFBC ADP of 11, it does seem like his price is going to factor in pretty much all of that upside. So there's not going to be much room for profit. And I agree with you in that, he's another guy who I don't really see myself drafting just because the price is so high. So, where do you, you talked about Bregman a little bit in the article, but where do you generally stand with him this year, and when would you feel comfortable drafting him? Because 11th does seem very high to both of us.
Probably like early second, which it's just a little high, and it's kind of quibbling. Again, great player. Some of this, Zach, I know you're in on base leagues, and obviously he's valued higher there. He had a 14% walk rate, but in batting average leagues, he's never hit 300. He had his first 30 home run season, And the Astros put the brakes on his speed, which is something I thought would happen. I know we had this argument last year when we did the rankings. You know, people are like, he could steal 20, he could steal 25. The Astros really are not an aggressive team on the bases. And, you know, outside of Altuve, and not even last year because Altuve was hurt, and maybe Tony Kemp a little bit when he was with the team, they don't really run, unless you've got a burner on that team or someone whose game is predicated on speed, they don't really run their players a lot. So I like Bregman in real life. I think he's a great player. He's an MVP candidate. It's just more that a lot of those skills, you know, don't translate to the roto version of fantasy.
I feel the same way. And I also, it also sounds like, you know, the old days you had that Yankee tax. I think now you sort of have an Astros tax where everyone loves players on the Astros. And for fantasy purposes, their values tend to get inflated just a little bit.
That's a good way to put it. Like Carlos Correa, who we'll talk about the next year. Right. I think George Springer, you know, looking at his ADP and you know, Springer's other player I like, but he's still being priced like he has the speed that people thought he'd have in the majors. So yeah, that's a really good point. That tax has kind of gone to the Astros. I think the Yankees still have it and the Red Sox do too. It's more that it's shifted among the top teams or redistributed.
Yeah, so I guess that's a very good segue to Carlos Correa, who's the first guy in our four star tier. He heads the four star tier group, and he was a big fantasy disappointment last season. He batted just .239, 15 homers, 65 RBIs, and 60 runs. But he was limited to 110 games due to injury. So I mean, I guess you could project those totals over a full season, and you have 20 homers, 90 runs, and close to 100 RBIs. So with Correa, how confident are you in him bouncing back? And, do you think the bounce back will be significant enough? Because his current ADP is 50. So do you think that there's room for him to achieve that price or even exceed that price? Or do you think that's a little bit too optimistic?
So before we do that, let me just run down the four-star tier. It's actually shorter than the five-star tier. So it's Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, Adalberto Mondesi, Corey Seager, and John Segura. So to get back to Correa, this ADP feels like the ceiling to me. I think he could get there. He's a really talented player. I kind of pointed out in the article, as bad as people think he's been, he's got a 115 DRC plus through his age 23 season as a shortstop. Like that's really good. Like he's been a heck of a hitter. It goes back to what I said about Bregman with the steals. He hasn't run in a couple years. I know some of that's injuries, but even if you prorate his numbers, you're probably still looking at 5 to 7 steals, not like the 20 to 25 people expected when he was in the minors. To me, it feels like the ceiling here is Bregman with maybe even a little less batting average. And if he gets there, without even that much speed. So if he gets there, I guess he could be a third round player. He's going, beginning of the fifth on average.
Yeah, 50 is his ADP.
So. Yeah, so it's like it's the fourth because it's 15 team. Yeah. So it just feels to me like you're paying for the ceiling here. And he has enough talent where I could be wrong and look stupid by saying this, and this could be an old take exposed, and he's a second round earner. But realistically, I just don't want to pay this price, particularly again, it's such a thick position. You don't really need to stretch on a Correa.
Yeah, to me, the discount from last season just isn't enough, to justify taking him there. And even just sticking to the shortstop position, you have Jean Segura. He's going 19 picks after Correa, and Corey Seager, who is actually your value pick in this tier, going 41 picks after Correa. So, to me, either of those two are a little bit more appealing considering their prices to Correa. So, it's all about the landscape of the whole position, like you said, and how, there are so many other options that I'm not going to pay, 100% full price on Correa, especially since he's coming off just a subpar season for his standards.
Yeah, I agree. So the next player here was, I mentioned him just before, Xander Bogaerts, and what a weird profile. I mean, he's been a really good player in real life. And, even with, he played hurt in 2017, he got hit by a pitch on a Jacob Feria pitch in early July last year, and he pretty much withered down the stretch. But he's been a solid player. It's just that his fantasy profile changes every year. Some years is power, some years are steals. some years his batting average. But what's your take on Bogaerts? Like, do you look at him and do you think he'll level off on some of these stats? Do you think he could get better and, like, maybe put it all together and have a year where he hits, for, like, 300, he hits 20 home runs, you know, or 25 home runs, he steals 15 bases? Or do you feel like there's too much variability here, Zach, to kind of gamble on that?
I've never been, like, overly excited about Bogaerts. Like you said, I think he might be, like, one of those better real-life players and fantasy player type of players. But I think, you know, what he did last year, I think he hit, what, 20 homers last season with a decent batting average. So, you know, I think he could, you know, perennially be, you know, what he did last season. But I'm not sure if I'm so excited about, say, getting to another level from what he did last season. So I think he's, like, a safe pick, but I don't think that there's a ton of room for upside. And that's why in this whole field of shortstops, he's someone who I'm not, you know, I'm not, he's not one of the first guys who's going to be on my target list for that reason. He's just not, he's just, you know, the floor might be decently high, but the ceiling just isn't all that high to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I kind of sound like a broken record here, but it's a similar idea that you're paying, I want to say you're paying for the ceiling. He could out earn it, but there's so many hitters who could hit 20 to 25 home runs and, you know, steal 10 bases with a decent enough average that it's like, why would you pay for this level when you can get this from a lot of other players at the position? And, you know, I mentioned this in the article too. There's a really big gap between the five and the four search here, in my opinion. Like, I feel like those six players really, you know, their ceilings are a lot higher than everyone else. And, you know, even the players in this tier, usually it's closer.
Yeah. So that's a decent segue to Adalberto Mondesi. So he's probably the most polarizing player among the fantasy community. Everyone has their opinion. And usually it's either extremely negative or extremely positive. There's not a lot of in-between opinions. And, you know, he stole 32 bases last season and hit 14 homers in just 75 games, batted a solid .276. But, you know, the issue with him is 77-11 strikeout to walk ratio. So that's certainly cause for concern. Where are you in terms of Mondesi? His current ADP is 41. Is that a price that you will consider? that just sound crazy to you?
Well, the funny thing about Mondesi is, so I'm higher on him, it seems, than many of the other experts. I wouldn't be surprised to pluck Mondesi in an expert league or two. That ADP, though, is too aggressive. Like, I would probably have Mondesi, like, in the 50s or lower 60s. I've done bids. I haven't done, like, draft rankings. So, yeah, that just feels like a little much. So Mondesi, like, all his metrics when it comes to, like, his swinging, you know, we're talking about Baez. I mean, Mondesi in a lot of ways is even riskier. I know he dropped his strikeout rate last year, but you're talking about half a season. He didn't really do anything if you watched him, where you're like, well, you know, he definitely improved. You know, he's definitely doing something differently. There's a swing change. He's really the same hitter who, you know, ran into a streak, A, of luck, and B, the Royals were out of it. Other teams in the AL were out of it. They really weren't pitching him very aggressively. Look, the one advantage for Mondesi is that he's going to play. Like, the Royals, even if he's really, really bad, like to the point of a Tim Anderson on base percentage, the Royals let Alcides Escobar play pretty much constantly for the last two or three years. So Mondesi is going to play. So he's going to run. I just don't see anything more, you know, even if he hits, like, you know, 15 home runs or 20 home runs and steals 35 bases, probably the ceiling here is a Tim Anderson with a bad batting average. And that's really good. And I think that can be worth, like I said, a fifth round pick if you can swallow the average. It's just that price that I see him going now, that's far too aggressive for me.
Yeah, and you could get Tim Anderson about 80 picks later. So that's what sounds crazy to both of us.
Tim, and that's the thing about Anderson. Anderson is a bad baseball player, but his defense will keep him in the lineup. And we'll talk about Anderson a bit. But, you know, his very similar enough profile where he goes out in some steals, but it's too big of a gap. Like, you can't extrapolate Mondesi to, like, a 28 home run, you know, 60 steal player. That's really, I mean, nobody does that. Like, even Trey Turner was a better bet to do that last year. Didn't do that.
And that's a good point. It's, I think the part of the mistake that people are making is just extrapolating what he did last season over a full season and saying, oh yeah, he's a 2050 guy, no doubt, and he's gonna hit for a good batting average as well. That's the mistake that people are making, and you know that's why I'm gonna probably be staying away from him, you know, in all my drafts, and especially considering that he's gonna be going for that type of price. So Mondesi to me seems like a very risky investment, and you know if I want to be risky, like we were saying before. You know, I'll take Tim Anderson 80 picks later and just not have to pay that kind of price.
Yeah. So speaking of risk, Corey Seager. So I think you mentioned he's my value pick in this tier. In part, it's because of his price. But, you know, as much as I picked him for that, it was in part because of the ADP and because of what he's done in the past. You know, just to play devil's advocate here for a minute, you know, I know he's young. I know he's like got a pedigree. He's going to be 25 in April, but you know, he's coming off a pretty serious injury. And, you know, the other piece of this, too, is that, you know, he's never hit over 30 home runs. He doesn't steal bases. You know, we know he's a good average player outside of last year. But I guess my question is, while he certainly could earn in this tier if everything goes right, do you have any reservations about Seager where, you know, putting the bargain aspect aside, you're worried like, well, I know he's a bargain, but like, what if he's like Michael Conforto in the first half last year and he comes out and his swing just isn't there?
Yeah, I would probably rank him. We have it Bogarts, Mondesi, Seager, and Segura. I'd probably take Segura ahead of all of them. I'd probably go Segura, Bogarts, maybe Seager, and then Mondesi. So I do like Seager a little bit more than Mondesi. You know, Seager was, you know, from a four category perspective, if he is healthy, you know, Seager's going to be a steal at his current ADP, which is 91. Just a year ago, he was a top 40 player. So that does seem to be like a pretty nice value for a guy who's still very young. But you do know that, you know, he's not going to run and you have the injury risk attached to him. So I think he's a little more of appealing of a player as some of the other guys we talked about, maybe a Bogarts or a Mondesi. But in terms of that, like we said, the shortstop position, he's not someone who I think is so much of a bargain that I'm going to be really aggressive to try to draft him this season.
Yeah, so I really have to skip to Segura because to me that's a pretty bold statement on your part that you have Segura above all these players. I don't necessarily disagree. I've been a big Segura fan in the past. I was in on him before his breakout year in 2016 with the Diamondbacks, and you know, obviously was jazzed to have him that year. But I guess my question for you is this: like, why do you like Segura better than anyone else in this tier? Is there a particular reason?
Because I just think that the floor is higher than any of these other players. I think that the risk, there's really, there's risk with Segura that maybe his power is not going to be, you know, maybe he'll hit 10 home runs, but in terms of just, you know, runs and stolen bases, I think there's very little risk with him. And I do like the situation he is in with Philadelphia, where he'll be hitting in a very good lineup, even if they don't sign Harper or Machado, which is probably should be seen as unlikely right now. You probably would have to think that they're going to get one of them. But even if they don't, you know, the lineup is pretty solid, and I do like him a lot for the coming season. And I do have a feeling that he's probably going to be on many of my teams, considering that, you know, he is valued pretty highly. I'm in the FSTA draft that took place a couple of weeks ago. I believe he was taken in the mid to late fourth round. That's pretty aggressive. But in general, I think I'm kind of in agreement with the price that he's coming with right now. So I have a feeling that I'm going to probably land up with him because I value him equally, if not higher than many other people in my leagues.
Yeah, I do wonder, like it's kind of an X factor just because the Phillies didn't have very many fast players last year. But the X factor to me is how much will Segura run? Like, you know, Cesar Hernandez stole 19 bases last year, but he's not really a burner. So I do wonder, like, will Segura have the green light or will the Phillies, you know, not have him stop running, but kind of be like, well, you know, we're not going to be nearly as aggressive as the Mariners or the Diamondbacks were. I think that's my only concern with Segura. Like, if Segura doesn't run nearly as much and, you know, if the power only improves a little bit because he's in Philadelphia and he's adjusting to National League pitching, which he hasn't seen in a couple of years, I don't see him dropping off, but, you know, I could see a season where he's more like one of these three starters. And again, I'm saying this is someone who really likes Segura. I almost ranked him over Seager as the value pick in this tier. Actually, those were the two I was going back and forth with. And in the end, I kind of chose out the ADP over the player. But I do like Segura. I mean, I generally agree with you for the most part. I think he's a really solid player, and those steals should stick around. And yeah, the average, you know, after being a bad hitter, you know, when he was with the Brewers, he's been a 300 hitter. Like, that's, I know average is a tough category to believe in, but when a player does it 3 years in a row, you kind of should believe.
And he did have that one season in Arizona where he hit 20 homers, and I think he stole over 30 bases that year too. So you think in Philadelphia, maybe, I don't know about 20, but maybe, you know, 15 high teens homers would be realistic. So I could see that type of season from Segura. And I don't think he's necessarily being undervalued, but I think that, you know, the price that he's coming at right now in drafts is something that I'd be willing to pay. So let's now move on to the three-star group. I think we've covered pretty much all the guys.
So yeah. I'll run through these players. And, you know, I think what we'll do, there's a lot of three-star players. So we'll do three each in this tier, and then we'll kind of go quickly through the two-star and the one-star. So the three-star tier, there are 10 players. And again, this will give you an idea of how deep the position is, because I think all these guys I'd be happy to have on my team with maybe one or two exceptions. Jose Peraza, Gleyber Torres, Tim Anderson, Ahmed Rosario, Elvis Andrus, Andrelton Simmons, Marcus Semien, Jorge Polanco, Jurickson Profar, and Chris Taylor. So, Zach, I'll let you start first, since I'm, you know, kind of quasi-hosting. Like, who's the first player you want to talk about here?
So the first duo, actually, that I thought that was interesting was, like, Jose Peraza versus Tim Anderson, because I think that, you know, comparing these guys, they're both power speed guys. Anderson has more power, but Peraza has the much better batting average. But, you know, Anderson's going on average more than 30 picks later than Peraza. So just with these two guys, you know, do you think that they're closer in value than that? Or do you really value Peraza, you know, I guess it would be equivalent to two rounds earlier than Anderson?
Well, I think they're closer. Like, I have Peraza and Anderson ranked fairly closely. You know, the reason that they're split, though, and I can understand, it feels like there's more risk with Anderson. Like Anderson, you know, he's a bad on-base player. I know that, you know, most leagues or a lot of the NFBC uses batting average. But there's really that fear with Anderson that he's going to hit 210 and just completely fall off the map. And, you know, the White Sox, if he's getting on base like 25% of the time, we're just going to have to demote him. I don't see that happening, which is why I think that split's too pronounced. But I believe that's what people are reacting to. They're reacting to that risk. Now, on the other hand, you know, Tim Anderson, the reason I'm impressed with him, so for a couple years in the majors, you know, he had this speed pedigree in the minors, and he ran, and then all of a sudden, you know, he stole 49 bases in double A in 2015. You know, and all of a sudden, like, he just didn't run in the majors. You know, 10 in 2016 as a rookie. 15 in 2017. Last year, he stole 26. And the piece that really encouraged me about Anderson, and I'm kind of searching for this now, he stole more in the second half. And, you know, his steal percentage, actually, I had that backwards. He stole 21 in the first half and dropped off to 5 in the second. I apologize. I was thinking of somebody else. So I think that's the piece with Anderson, is that if he can keep that pace up from the first half, and even if he can keep up some of that pace and steal 35 bases, we talk about some modesty. You're looking at a really valuable player. I think that's just the question, though. Anderson is just an inconsistent, maddening player. And, you know, a 7-walk-to-61-strikeout ratio in the second half, I think that's why people are holding off. They know the potential. They just don't want to wind up with a lemon. Peraza feels a little safer.
Yeah, I think Anderson, you know, in an on-base percentage league, of course, you're going to have reservations about taking Anderson. Like, in Tout, I'm probably going to be a little bit too afraid to take him. But, you know, in a batting average league like Labor, you know, I kind of like him as a little bit of an undervalued power speed guy. And even talking about Peraza, one encouraging thing with Peraza, you're not sure if he's going to be able to do. I believe he hit 14 home runs last season. So that kind of came out of nowhere, the power. But one encouraging thing is that, you know, 9 of his 14 homers came during the final 2 months of the season. So maybe he's kind of tapped into some sort of power potential, and maybe this coming season he does, you know, easily hit 15 or maybe hit high teens home run. So yeah, like you said, you know, I think the risk with Peraza is a little bit less, but with that difference of a price, I'd probably lean towards Anderson. I think Anderson, he batted 240 last year, but I think the year before he hit something like in the high 250s. So that's something that's not, it's not going to be damaging for owners in batting average.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Peraza too is, you know, his average, you know, I don't want to say it came out of nowhere. He's like a good contact hitter, but you know, he had 259 the year before. You know, he is a, like a lot of the shortstops, a low walk guy, 4% in the last 2 years. So I don't necessarily have faith in that 288 average. I'm not saying he'll hit 260, but if he hits 270, you know, then suddenly the difference in these two players is less pronounced.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I like, I'd rather have Peraza, all things equal, but I definitely think that the difference is not 30 picks. Maybe it's more like 10 to 15 picks.
So did you talk about two players or one there? Since you know, you kind of, we did.
I talked about. Well, it was a two player comparison, so I guess I get penalized for two players in that situation.
All right, so I'll do two now. Actually, I'll compare two players as well, and they're two very different players, but. Let's talk about the New York shortstops. Let's talk about Gleyber Torres and Tim Anderson.
Ahmed Rosario, man. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Tim Anderson. Yep, Ahmed Rosario. That would be an interesting swap there. So let's start with Gleyber Torres. So I feel like of all the shortstops, relative to his ADP, even more than Correa, like even more than Javi Baez, I'm really down on Gleyber Torres where his ADP is. You know, he's not ranked super high, but if we just went off a strict ADP and, you know, valuation, Torres would be in the four-star tier, and I don't have him there. So, you know, I'm just looking at this now. I think he was in the upper 60s. When I say upper 60s, I mean it was like close to 70. So actually, he's higher than that. So Torres is 56th overall in the Draft Champions ADP. Do you believe in that price act? Do you feel like that's six slots behind Correa? You know, we're looking at shortstops here. That's 13 ahead of Segura. That's like way ahead of Seager and Peraza. Do you believe in Torres in that price? Could you talk yourself into that?
And not really. I think we're talking about the Astros tax. I think this is a classic Yankees tax situation. So Torres, he doesn't run. I don't know how many steals he had last year, but it wasn't a very high.
He had six and he ran in the minors. And, yeah. You know, I could see him getting to like 10 to 12, like as a ceiling.
Yeah. So I think, last year he had a lot. He had 20 plus homers? You think he had at least 20 homers?
He had 24 homers and six steals and he had 271.
Yeah, so I think people are reacting to, you know, the counting stats that he put up in the portion of the season. So, you know, I like Torres, but I think the market price right now is a little bit too high for him. You mentioned Ahmed Rosario, the other New York shortstop. His ADP is 135, so that just goes to show you the difference in those two players. I'd rather have Torres, but 70 picks seems a little bit extreme. So, yeah, Torres is someone who, you know, in a redraft league, I'm probably not going to be owning. Just because of that market value being a little bit too high for him.
Yeah, my take on Torres and why his price is so high. He had a really good year, and by baseball perspective, his metrics, it's interesting. So a lot of Yankee fans, I don't know if you know any Yankee fans like this, Zach, they're mad because they think Miguel Andujar should have been Rookie of the Year over Shohei Ohtani. And you know, I think that argument's ridiculous. I think it was Ohtani in a walk. You know, that's a whole separate show if we wanted to do that. But according to Warp, Gleyber Torres was better than both of them, at least as hitters. And, you know, Torres is the player Yankee fans should probably be mad about. Now, that being said, again, you know, it's Warp isn't, you know, the same as fantasy. And I feel like this is Gary Sanchez all over again, where people are extrapolating, like, he had a great year, he's going to do it again. I feel like the projections, the early projections for Torres are more realistic, which is, you know, mid-20s home runs. You know, 270 average, maybe 10 steals. Again, that's really good, and that could propel him into the four-star tier. It just feels, though, he's being priced as, like, part of the top of the next group, and I just don't see it. So to kind of segue into Rosario, he's the player I was thinking of. This is where I got him and Anderson mixed up. Rosario ran in the second half. He stole 18 bases in the second half out of his 24. You know, we know he has the speed. He showed a little bit of power. It's not difficult to see him kind of doing what Segura did with more speed and less average. And the other piece of this is, The Mets lineup is better. Like it's just a demonstrably better lineup. I could see more runs. I could see more runs batted in. Like you said, so you kind of like where Rosario's priced?
Yeah, I like where he's at 135, I believe. And, you know, he had, like you said, 18 of his 24 steals were in the second half. The issue with Rosario is, you know, can he improve his on-base percentage? Can he get on base at a higher rate that will allow him to, you know, put up, you know, routinely put up 30-plus stolen base total? So do you have confidence in him improving the on-base percentage? And what do you think about his power going forward? Hasn't been, I think he had 9 homers. It hasn't been great, but there is some feeling that he has a little bit of upside in that department.
Yeah, I see a little growth in the power. I never really see Rosario being like, you know, he's not going to be a 20 home run hitter. I see maybe 15 as a ceiling. You know, the piece with on base that I'm trying to look at, I'm trying to see if that like improved in the second half. And, you know, it's kind of tough because it did, but it mostly did because he was hitting the ball better. His walk rate actually dropped very slightly. You have to kind of squint to see the drop, but it wasn't like his batting eye improved. So most of my bet on him is with the speed, and I do agree with you. His on base makes it a little bit tough to get too excited about that, but I think I just like the player, and there's enough here with the price that I'd rather take Rosario, you know, than pay for someone, you know, even like a Tim Anderson who's going a little bit higher. I'd almost rather take a little bit of that discount with Rosario.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Rosario, if I'm really prioritizing other positions and I'll have to sell for Rosario as my starting shortstop in a deep mixed league, I'm fine with that. I love him as a starting middle infielder in a mixed league. So yeah, Rosario will definitely be on my radar. We'll see how the rest of the market values him. But right now it's looking like they're valuing him at a very reasonable cost.
Okay, so we've run through my top 4 players at this position. So who's your final of the 6 left? Who's the final player that you want to talk about?
Well, I actually was looking at Elvis Andrus's ADP is 30 picks after Rosario. It's at 165. And, you know, I was interested to hear what you thought about Andrus because he's someone who I've always been a fan of. He's always been very consistent. The floor has always been high. But last year, you know, his numbers were way down across the board. And I know he was hurt for a good chunk of the season, but you know, I'm very concerned about the speed in particular, just 5 steals in 97 games. So what are your thoughts on Andrus for this year? And do you think the lack of running was injury related or is it something to be more concerned about going forward?
It was probably injury related. You know, what's really tough about Andrus is that I'm more concerned about the batting average drop than the steal drop, because if you look at him, you know, so he had a big power year in 2017. No one thought it was realistic. Everyone looked at that and said, that's not going to hold. He had a lot of fence scrapers. The batted ball data didn't support it. But we're all like, all right, well, you know, so what? Like if he's a 300 hitter or close to 300, you know, he pops 5 to 10, he steals 25 bases. You know, we talked about Segura. You're looking at Segura. You're looking at a 4-star player. You know, I am at the bottom of the 4-star tier. You had Segura higher, but you're looking at that level of player. Even if the steals come back, you know, if you're looking at Andrus hitting like 6 home runs, you know, stealing 20 bases and only hitting 250 or 260, he kind of fits in with the players in this tier. And honestly, I'd rather take somebody else. Like I'd rather take like Marcus Semien, who offers like power speed, not as much speed as Andrus has historically, but, you know, kind of a comparable overall set. I'd rather take Jurickson Profar and his youth and upside. I might even rather take Chris Taylor, who had a down year last year, but still at 17 home runs and stole 9 bases. So that's kind of my problem with Andrus, is that if that average doesn't bounce back and that's kind of, you know, he goes back to what he was doing pre-2016, even with the steals, like he's just not a really dynamic player.
Right. And there's a lot of warning signs, you know, with him just in general across the board. You saw him, the power kind of came out of nowhere the year before. And I don't know if, you know, it's safe to count on him for 20 plus steals anymore. So he's currently going in the 12th round of 15 team NFBC draft. So I think, you know, I'm tempted to maybe take a chance on him in a couple of leagues at that price. But then again, there's not, you know, there are other, as you mentioned, you know, younger, potentially more exciting options, even priced at that rate, at that price, or even a little bit cheaper than Andrus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I've liked Andrus in the past for the same reasons you have. I just don't really trust him this year. So yeah, that's all I really have on Andrus. I think the final player up, there's some interesting players in this tier, and I could really could talk about all of them, but I think I want to talk about Jurickson Profar. So, you know, I mentioned him before. So Profar was the other side of Andrus. He was, you know, hurt and literally out of baseball in terms of injury for like 2 years. And we kind of wondered what he'd be, never thought he'd be the same. And he was solid last year. Like, he wasn't great. Like, he, you know, if you look at his overall numbers, he wasn't tremendous, but from a fantasy perspective, he really produced. So, I do feel his current ADP is a little bit aggressive. It's kind of looking at more growth, and I don't necessarily see that. So, you know, Zach, do you agree? Do you feel like Profar's ADP is a little bit too high, or is he someone you could see really living up to that superstar pedigree from when he was a prospect?
I think, you know, last year was encouraging, but at the same time, I don't think that I'm going to be really actively in on Profar. And I'm a little concerned about, you know, the move from Texas to Oakland. He did hit 20 homers last year, but what is the realistic home run expectation for him this season? Maybe he drops down to 15, and maybe what, 15 homers and 10 steals really isn't as exciting. So, you know, Profar, he's someone who, you know, open to drafting, but at the same time, he's not going to really be at the top of my radar.
Yeah, and I agree, you know, and I'd rather, you know, I mentioned this before, like, I'd rather have Semien, who, you know, has shown he can hit for power in Oakland and has a little bit more speed. And, you know, someone I have to mention, just because his valuation is kind of off the charts relative to what you'd expect, is Simmons. You know, Simmons is, you know, 11 home runs and 10 steals last year, but he's been solid on average. He does have a little bit more steal potential than that. And he's been healthy. Like, you know, he'll play because of the defense. The Angels almost need him to be out there every day. So, you know, Simmons, I believe, is at the bottom of this list in terms of ADP. And, you know, he's somebody in a deeper mix. I wouldn't mind as my middle, you know, just kind of as an average hedge, particularly if I've taken some players earlier who are bad average bets.
Yeah, and you actually mentioned Semien, who I'm a very big fan of Semien, and I drafted him in Tout last year as my middle infielder. I drafted Orlando Arcia as my shortstop, of course, and that turned out to be a disaster. But Semien, you know, very underrated. I think he ranked like fifth among all shortstops in runs scored. He was actually my pick for shortstop targets for the article that went up this on Monday morning. So I do like Semien a lot. A very underrated 15-15 type of producer. And, you know, he did hit 27 homers a couple of years ago. So there is potential to him for maybe to get more towards that high teens, 20 home run. So Semien, definitely a guy who's on my radar. And you mentioned Semien is someone who you prefer even over, you know, the Profars and maybe even the Andruses. So yeah, thumbs up for Semien. So let's now go on to the two-star tier. And let's see, the two-star tier, the names in the two-star tier are Eduardo Escobar, Paul DeJong, Garrett Hampson, Ketel Marte, Asdrubal Cabrera, and Willy Adames. So who in that group sparks your interest?
Let's see. I like a few of these players. You know, Cabrera is still the player. He was my value pick here. I still really like Cabrera. 20 or more home runs, two of the last three seasons. Just one of those players that kind of falls under the radar for a lot of people. Although I almost feel like he's fallen under the radar so often that by the time, you know, I've heard five or six analysts say, I like Cabrera, he's really good, you know, he's going to Texas, that by the time these drafts actually take place, he's not going to be valued at the bottom of the top 300. But if you can get him there, or even like, you know, just inside the top 250, great value for me. He's going to play. He should be Texas starting third baseman. And even if they, you know, promote Patrick Wisdom, Cabrera will play, do a deal with the Mets. He'll play second, he'll play short, he'll play third, he'll move all around. There's just a lot of value to me in this pick.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And the position versatility is very important. And also the fact that he's eligible at, you know, a middle infield spot and a corner infield spot is underrated, because he could play, what, middle infielder, corner infielder, second, short, third. So you can move him all around. And especially in leagues where, you know, daily lineup changes are allowed, he even carries a little bit more value. So Asdrubal, yeah, I'm hoping that Asdrubal's price doesn't go up too much, because he's definitely someone who's gonna, I'm hoping to have on a bunch of different teams.
Yeah. So is there somebody here that you don't like that you feel like you, at their ADP at least, you'd say stay away?
Well, let's see. I don't know how you feel about Ketel Marte. I mean, do you think that he still has some of the upside that he had a few years ago with Seattle, or are you kind of, is it the point where like he is what he is at this point?
Well, you know, I was really down on Marte for the last couple of years. I felt like he was overrated. He had one season in the minors in 2015 where, you know, he was a heck of a hitter. Otherwise, he hadn't really performed in the majors. Last year, he was good enough where I'm like, I'm okay with him here. But, you know, what comes down with Marte, everyone thought he'd run and that was going to be part of the value. He just hasn't run in the majors, and I'm not sure he will. Like, I'm, you know, if you look at his speed ratings, whether it's ours or someone else's, he kind of just grades out as a mediocre base runner. Like, he just isn't somebody who I'd expect to steal a bunch of bases. So if he's not going to do that, you know, we keep mentioning Semien. You know, if he's going to be Semien without the steals, then it's like, eh, like I just feel like he's blah at best. And there's still one or two people drafting Marte, like they kind of expect that upside. They're thinking he's only 25. You know, he could get better. He could get better. I just don't feel like paying for it based on what he's done so far.
Yeah, there are people who are still very high on him and haven't given up on him yet. So we're still at the point where his price is really not much of a bargain. I'm considering what he's done so far in the big league. So what about Paul DeJong? I believe he was your value pick among the two star players in your article. So what do you like about DeJong this year?
Actually, it was my two star value pick was Cabrera, who we talked about already. Oh, but
I like DeJong too, though. Yeah,
but I do like DeJong, and you know, it's not even that I love him. I feel like people are viewing him as a disappointment, and really, it's somewhat of an injury disappointment. And yes, the batting average dropped quite a bit, but the power didn't. Like, you know, he still has the potential to hit 25 home runs, and you know, if he's healthy, if he manages to, you know, spend the year with the team, defensive metrics love him. So, you know, like a lot of players here, he'll stay in the lineup unless he's terrible. And unlike Tim Anderson and, you know, some of the shortstops we've mentioned, the walk rate is high enough that, you know, the on base is acceptable, you know, if the average isn't. So as a result, you know, I think you could be looking at 25 home runs if he manages to stay healthy. Even if the average is 250, that's still a pretty good profile at this price.
Yeah, 25 homers in 2017 and 19 last year in just 115 games. So definite 25 home run potential with him. And he had a bad batting average last year, but I believe the year before he had 285. So there's potential for him to at least be a guy who won't hurt you in batting average. So
yeah,
there's some value with him. You know, he's ranked outside the top 200 or right at the back end of the top 200 in ADP. So there's upside with that.
Yeah, the 2017 looks like it was a little bit Babbitt fueled, and his minor league averages weren't really impressive either. But outside of that, again, you know, 250, even if he's a 250 hitter with 25 home run power, that still plays at this level. I mean, at this point, you know, you're really looking at a deep league middle infielder or a deeper league or even NL only.
Yeah, he's just another guy that proves, you know, the depth of this position and it's just not necessary to overpay for guys in that middle tier. So, anyone else in the two star that you want to talk about, or should we move just down to one star?
Just briefly. So, Garrett Hampson. He's being priced kind of aggressively. Do you think he's going to stick with Colorado? Do you think there's any risk, or does Colorado make him a safe pick? He's going at 175 right now at ADP. I know you, Zach, you probably think that's too aggressive, but does he have a chance to earn that?
I think it's possible just because of the combination of the batting average and the steals, and how, you know, batting average these days is so underrated, and to get that along with the steals is especially valuable. So I personally, like you guessed, would not really take him that high, but I could see, you know, it's reasonable to consider him at that spot. I am pretty optimistic about Hampson this year, but yeah, that does seem a little bit aggressive at that price inside the top 200.
Yeah. So as you said, let's jump to the one star. And shortstop is so rich that I actually cheated this year and went beyond the top 30. So there's, you know, it's 30 plus, and let's run through the names in this tier. We're just going to pick one each. We're going to pick the player we like. I'm not going to pick the player I went with already as my value pick because it's redundant. So there's Dansby Swanson, Didi Gregorius, Orlando Arcia, who you said you got burned by last year, Brandon Crawford, Fernando Tatis Jr., Scott Kingery, and Marwin Gonzalez. So I'll start with you, Zach. Who's your value pick here? And you could even go off the board if you like and pick somebody who hasn't been listed in so far.
Well, the first guy that just jumped out at me was Arcia, because I was just, you know, I drafted him last year. I spent $10 on him. He was a complete bust, but you know, the very underrated part, the overlooked part about Arcia's season is that he did bat 290 in 154 second half plate appearances. You know, his ADP is 336. I'm not sure I'm going to be, you know, overly aggressive with drafting him, but I do think that he offers some profit potential, considering that, you know, just a year ago we were talking about him as a 15-15 guy with maybe 20-20 potential. So he's someone that I wouldn't completely forget about, considering the very cheap price he's going for in drafts this year.
Yeah, and I think my, you know, I mentioned it's tough for me because Dansby Swanson was my player in the article, and I'd probably go with him again if I didn't want to, like, didn't mind repeating myself. But I'm actually going to just go with my stab in the dark here, and that's Didi Gregorius. So, you know, we know why Gregorius is ranked here. He's ranked here because he had Tommy John surgery. We have no idea of his timetable. But given what we know about his numbers, I like him here. You know, he's being drafted as a reserve pick, essentially, outside of, you know, the top 345, which is, you know, 23 players, 15 teams. I like him as a reserve stab. And in a league like Labor, where you can, you know, pretty much have unlimited DL, you can just stash Gregorius and kind of wait and wait and wait. I might even take him in the regular rounds, like, say, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. If he works out and you get half a season of Gregorius in a league like that, where you don't have to worry about DL spots or, you know, running out of them, great. If you don't, it really doesn't matter. Like, so many of those late picks don't work out anyway, and you're already speculating. Like, honestly, you're probably taking a player like Brandon Crawford in that kind of league where it's like, Crawford could be fine, but there's really no upside there at all. You're probably looking at 15 home runs, a 250 average, no steals, and that's if everything breaks right for Brandon Crawford. So I like Gregorius as my late draft, you know, like shot in the dark. And if he works out, awesome. If he doesn't, who cares?
Yeah, he was going to be my second choice among that group. And, you know, Like you said, he had 25 homers last year. But if he even plays, you know, what's the worst case scenario for Gregorius? Maybe he plays 2 months this season. And even if he does that, you know, he's certainly worth a dollar maybe at the end of an offseason.
I mean, the worst case for Gregorius is he comes back from the surgery. He doesn't look like the same hitter. Yeah. He's bad. And you, at that point, you probably keep him on your active lineup for a week or two before you're like, you know what? This just isn't working. I'll just cut him or reserve him and go with somebody else. So you get a week or two of bad stats. That's probably your worst case.
Yeah, so I wouldn't mind that at all. And the best case is that he returns in, what, early July and is, you know, basically the exact same player he was over the past couple of seasons. So, yeah, he's certainly worth a pick. If I could get him in the reserve rounds, you know, I'd be thrilled. I'd even be willing to deep mixed league, say in mixed auction tout where you could just, like you were talking about, you know, stash him on your bench. I did the same thing last year with Jimmy Nelson. It didn't turn out too well, but he was just on my bench on my DL the entire season. But if you could do something like that with Gregorius and at least get a couple of months from him, you know, for a price that is basically free, that's something I'd be very interested in.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else? I think that wraps up the shortstops. We'll save our NL and AL only, you know, players for the articles at the end of the week. I think they're not really that exciting.
No, not at all. And hopefully the next time we record a podcast, maybe Machado and Harper will be signed. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Who the hell knows? All right. We'll take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 184 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. Once again, I just want to remind everybody to please read all of our coverage of Baseball Prospectus on the fantasy side. We have about 20 articles a week. I think it might actually be 21, including our target avoids, stating the position, my fantasy tier rankings. I could go on and on. It's really worth the price of admission. Additionally, we have chats every week. There's the bat signal where you can ask a question and it's answered within 24 hours. Really, you just can't go wrong. Also, as far as the podcast goes, please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher and all the great places that you can find this podcast. Once again, I'm Mike Gianella. With me has been Zach Steinhorn and Jim Macramos behind the glass. Next week is going to be our outfield podcast. We're going to talk about 75 outfielders, or at least a lot of those outfielders. So it's going to be a jam-packed week. We really look forward to hearing you hearing our voices then, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening.